In today's competitive landscape, the ambition to be data-driven is a shared goal among advertisers. Yet, despite the abundance of data at their fingertips, many fail to harness its full potential. The question is why? The answer lies in the operational bottlenecks and strategic trade-offs that impede the scaling of data-powered advertising. These obstacles have traditionally constrained the ability to deploy data at scale effectively. However, the industry is now witnessing a transformative shift. Breakthrough advancements in audience targeting, coupled with sophisticated data-powered automation, are revolutionizing the way advertisers engage with their audiences. In this episode of our four-part series in partnership with Fluency, we delve into these pioneering strategies, offering you an in-depth exploration of how to leverage automation to unlock the true power of your data. By doing so, you can achieve unparalleled audience relevance, precision in targeting, and robust privacy measures, setting a new standard in data-driven advertising. To kick off this episode, I'd like to introduce my guest today, Eric Mayhew, co-founder and president, as well as chief product officer at Fluency, and Taryn King, senior product manager of ad technology at Intuit. Welcome to the show. I think it goes without saying that every marketer understands the power and importance of data. And if they don't, well, they're probably not listening to this podcast. But I'd like to hear from you both, in your opinion, what being data-driven means today. Eric, let's start with you.
Richard, first of all, thanks for having us back. Nice to talk about this topic. In the previous episodes, as we've spoken about, we're heavily into automation here at Fluency. So this topic is super near and dear to my heart. When you talk data-driven, and that word is, to me, is, I'm sure there's an accepted definition out there, but what I notice is it's not the same for everybody. So I've tried to partition into two things. So I think of data-driven as this superset of concepts. I'll break it down into two different phrases that also maybe make it a little bit more clear what you could do all underneath the umbrella of data-driven. You could be data-informed, and that's one way that you can operate. And I think we all as people have some level of this. Either we're data-informed, or the alternative might be data powered. And in an automation platform, that's super important to us, is to take that from data informed to data powered. But I don't think anybody in your audience would ever say that they run entire businesses and strategies and networks without any data at all. So data kind of informs us as people. We accumulate experiences over time, and we make the next decision based on the information that we've accumulated throughout our journey. And I would put that in that data informed category. And, you know, well-organized companies can work very well with data-informed, but they're still taking a manual step. They're taking that data that they have, that very nice data that they've been looking at. It's a little simpler because data-informed has a person in the middle. They can take a look at that data, they can interpret it, make a decision, and then take manual action from there. When we take this into data-powered, which is really where I love to focus, we have to have some pedigree of the data, and the data has to be purposeful, and the data has to be somewhat clean. So in those two hemispheres, I think that the world is moving closer and closer to data powered. This is one of those places we kind of hit on the other day with the AI work. AI does a really nice job helping us transform unstructured data, puts that human element done by the computer that's required as the precursor to becoming data powered. And so those are the two places that I would love for us to stay focused on when we think about being data-driven, is are we data-informed or are we data-powered?
And Taryn?
First of all, thanks for having me here. Data is something that Intuit relies on heavily in any decision-making that we do as an organization. Clean data entities is a huge initiative at Intuit, making sure that all of the data that we've accumulated across all of our business units are really laid out in a nice way for our analytics teams to make informed decisions. When I think about being data-driven as a marketer, it's thinking about your data in a way that I think historically has not been as much of a focus. The pressure of cookie deprecation, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit, has fueled a lot of this in organizations. Data in itself is not just something you accumulate. It's an asset. It's your differentiating marker as a business. Now that this has become more of a focus, I think more than ever, data is becoming essential to, like, A, your road mapping process as a product organization, and then B, like, what is your actual strategy for efficacy? Terms like clean rooms and things like that are all a byproduct of the impact that data has. And as marketers, if we're not looking at data in this critical way, there are so many opportunities that you're leaving on the table, like full stop. That needs to be the number one priority of really any marketer right now. If you're not looking at the data very closely, there's just so many things that you're leaving on the table, and it needs to be more essential, even, you know, regardless of decisions made around cookie deprecation. It is absolutely essential.
Well, we'll definitely get to the cookie in this next question. The modern marketer must navigate all manner of privacy and reporting considerations. It's an almost ever-changing privacy landscape at times. You know, just when we thought we were losing the cookie is now here to stay. Taryn, this question specifically is for you. What are the primary considerations marketers are facing in 2024 or even just the next year?
This is a funny one. I can recall being in a room with a lot of executive marketers and calling out that I was very confident that the cookie was being deprecated by Google and they would not push the line there or the goalpost, if you will, again. So I got some egg on my face on that one. And it caused me to really take a look at, you know, privacy sandbox, all of these movements being made. And what does the future look like in this advertising ecosystem where previously orgs had to, or were told that they had to find an alternative from an existential risk standpoint around targeting capabilities with the cookie expiring. Now with this change, initially I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, business as usual, but that's really not the case. Regardless of the decisioning around the cookie, Google has also stated that they're going to ask consumers more upfront if they want to be tracked on a publisher by publisher basis. So it's no longer dictated more geographically, but this decision is going to vary greatly based on that mechanism. For example, if Google applies this in a way that Apple has previously, this would be more of a blanket approach. So if you go to websites on Chrome and now you're asked, hey, do you want any tracking? And it's very much in your face, that would result in a very similar scenario to the cookie going away regardless, but gives Google more hands on it. And we can argue as to like why Google made this decision. Is it a revenue standpoint? Is it making sure others don't eat their own lunch from that standpoint? Regardless of it, I mean, 25% of browsers are already cookieless. And with these, you know, ongoing privacy concerns, it really doesn't change the stance too much around the role of data and targeting. I still firmly believe that if you do not think critically around alternatives, you will still be left behind, because at the end of the day, orgs have now been kind of shepherded or forced into thinking beyond the cookie. And if you have not already been doing so, you still will get left behind. So it's one of those situations that appears like, hey, you know, crisis averted, let's wipe the sweat off our foreheads and go back to business as usual. But that is not what people should be doing right now.
Following up on that, and this is a question to you both, what do you consider to be the playbook for activating first-party data? Eric, let's start with you on this one.
Yeah, as I look at this, there's nothing more frustrating than putting the energy and effort into collecting good data and not finding a way to actually activate on it. It's so discouraging and it's so expensive, candidly. So I think that there are a few fundamental things that we do that we really want to understand as we go into data collection, because it takes effort to instrument, it takes effort to collect, it has infrastructure costs for storage. But I would start by understanding it and your initiatives and your goals. There's something unique about the data you want to collect and how you would want to use it in your marketing strategy going forward. It's not just data for data's sake, it's data because it's going to tell a story later. We're all storytellers here. There's always the challenge of, as you go to activated networks, you've got to find some consistent identity. So there's consistent identity frameworks out there that will allow you to say, this user is this user on Google, it's this user on Meta, it's this user in DSP world. So you need to find some way to bring your consistent identity forward. So the next thing you have to think about is, as marketers, we're oftentimes marketing to people before they've been on our website or taken action and before they become our customers. So before we have that data. So what we try to do there is we want to look for patterns and similarities in the data that allow us to do audience expansion. Marketing to people that have already purchased a product from you, certainly valuable, but looking for those trends, of those common attributes within your audiences that allow you to say, these are people that are similar expand my audience outside of people that have actually already taken action, super critical. And then finally, this is where the rubber meets the road. And this is the part that I think ends up left on the table an awful lot. And that's to activate, test, and refine those audiences. It's heavy and it's an expensive process and it's clumsy a lot of times to go and actually test any of these audiences at scale. Looking for a integrations or a platform partner that can help you bring those audiences at scale to your initiatives, I think is super important. And if you don't have that, you really end up in this spot where it's very difficult to do that test and refine. You might be able to activate on small scale, but to test and refine other strategies is really, really clumsy. I think anybody that's used these in the space so far knows that the uploads are large unless you're using a third party. The uploads are inconsistent from advertising network to advertising network. And you just need to find some place that makes that feel a little simpler because you're trying to measure response. You need to test in large scale. You need to look at the trends that come back and then make any adjustments that you have. You'll get it dialed in.
And Taryn, your thoughts here.
I agree with so much of what Eric is saying. When I think about first party data, it's hard to isolate that without also looking at other sources that have been used historically by a lot of these orgs, you know, the DMVs of the world and things like that to augment data. It's really first evaluating internally to say, hey, here's these data sets that I have. When I think again, like let's say there's a world where the cookie's going away no matter what, and you're forced into this mindset. I think people should still have that mantra in their heads to make them think critically about this. From your data sets, what are your differentiators compared to competitors? What sorts of data do you track that, you know, whether it's an assumption or a known element versus these competitors in the space? And how can you leverage that to stay competitive from a targeting perspective, from a knowledge perspective of what you know about your own customers? Then in terms of analyzing your own, again, from the first party perspective around data, it's looking at the depth of that data, right? How many columns do you have? The breadth of that data, how many rows do you have? And then understanding that piece to say, like, is this enough to go to market with any interesting strategy from an ad targeting perspective? Is my data on itself enough? Is the deterministic side enough, I mean? Or do we need to look at even making inferred segments? So there's an example scenario of a very large SaaS product, right? You have a huge customer base and you have these upsells. Maybe you have in-product modals and things like that to get your current customers to execute either through inventory you have or across the web. By looking at those who have made the move to this add-on or upsell or what have you, you can perhaps build these propensity segments to say, hey, we know this subset takes this initiative and moves forward. And then we have this huge base who has not done so. Are there any data segments that can tell you that, you know, this other audience is more likely to be someone who would purchase this eventually? And then that can help inform your strategy going forward and then ultimately help you find others externally, right? Through your own acquisition efforts to find folks that look at that. So I really think that organizations are not realizing what they can actually do with their data. And a lot of this used to take a long time to sift through it. But with AI coming into the picture, a lot of data analysis can be done in a matter of hours versus months. And so you can start to manipulate in ways that used to take tons of resources. And now it's more about just figuring out what's there and then formulating a plan around it. If organizations are not prioritizing and resourcing around looking internally at these data sources, and they're just looking externally for second party data or third party data sources, that to me is erroneous. I would do that eventually, but only when you really get a feel for what does my data look like. And then as Eric alluded to, it's like once you identify and evaluate, and you have a good handle on, you know, what is in my current toolkit, what can I look to augment, then you can go into the activation side of things. On the activation side, as Eric had mentioned, it's all about testing. It's figuring out what works and what doesn't. For example, one data source could work on social, may not make sense for like a search audience or even a CTV, where it can definitely be a little bit more broad in general. And so how do you define those pieces? Some of that actually requires clean room collaboration with other parties. When you look at your data and say, hey, this user converted, like, for example, mobile is a black box. By collaborating with these entities, you can get it to do a determination. And it's building your first party data, but by collaboration with another source. So that's another thing that folks are looking at. I think for someone to say, we're completely done looking at our data, we know everything about it, that's also something I would not believe, because there's so much that you can do there. There needs to be a team, you know, essentially fully dedicated to looking at this data.
You touched on multi-channel just there, which is a great segue to my next question. In quite a few of the other episodes, we've discussed multi-channel in the media mix at length. I'm curious how marketers can structure their data to drive and support their multi-channel media. Taryn, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because there's obviously a lot of products under Intuit's umbrella. And when they think about multi-channel, it's also differing based off of products, because some are like MailChimp is very different than QuickBooks, which is, of course, very, very different from TurboTax. And when you look at trying to divide out and conquer there, and you look at the data that you have around that, some of these audience sources can be adjusted based on the channels you use, whether you're using an activation platform like something like LiveRamp or TransUnion, things like that. They have their own ways to dedupe down to the ID for these particular ad servers. One of the things that we are looking at right now on the Intuit side is household versus individual. The big thing I look at is CTV. So the question you have to ask yourself in your organization is, like, maybe I'm B2B or B2C. Regardless of that, is it important to reach an entire household with your messaging? Or are you looking for a singular person that lives in that home? That can be a huge decision and it can have huge implications on the cost structure that you have. And that can vary based on campaign. I think when you also look at the data that you have under your belt, I had alluded to it a little bit before, is around these propensity segments. Are you, for example, working in a vertical where a lookalike audience actually makes sense for you? Are you trying to upsell a current audience? Are you trying to look outward? And if you're looking outward, that can be very different from B2B or B2C. Lookalikes, for example, are an augmentation path that is very clearly a B2C play. But from the standpoint of B2B, I'm not sold on it. So I have some skepticism around that. We'll talk about CTV in a little bit, spoiler alert. But around CTV, there are some, I would say, lack of clarity around what makes sense from a targeting perspective for these channels, because I would say that's the Wild West still in some ways. I had thought that CTV would be more refined, but so many changes to these platforms have made multi-channel a really interesting conversation. But I think these types of solutions really then lend advertisers to take a hard look at where they're activating, because multi-channel can also be a consequence of direct relationships versus platforms. Like a platform like Fluency is dedicated to multi-channel, where others historically have gone and done direct deals either with these platforms themselves or through these DSP aggregators. But I've also worked with a lot of clients in past lives who do not think multi-channel in terms of how they manage. So for instance, if you have 10 different channels running, all of a sudden you have maybe 10 different people or 10 different browser tabs open. How do you aggregate that together, I think, is also very challenging, because if I'm spending 3 hours a week or more trying to just get a sense of where all my money is being spent, then that's not an efficient use of my time by any means. And I'm not surprised when I see that quite often, but that is something that needs to shift in the industry for sure.
And Eric, you and I talked about a lot of things in the first episode that we put together here, but this was not one of those topics. What do you have to add here?
Well, first of all, I am loving being on this panel with Taryn. I've known Taryn for a long time, and to hear the experiences that he's gained through his work at SMB Media Labs, it's just awesome. I'm learning as much as I hope I'm presenting information while I'm on this podcast with Taryn. Very, very cool. There were a lot of things that Taryn just said that were in my mental, you know, checklist for this as well. But one of the things that I'm most excited about when it comes to multi-channel is exactly where Taryn was just talking about. I see it in so many different places that there's a disconnect. You hire somebody to do your paid search, someone else to do your social, someone else to do your DSP or your CTV, your upper funnel type stuff. And they're independent. Even if they're in the same company that does it, like Darren said, it could be different people that do it. And the alignment between those things is such an untapped potential. And I think we've all seen the classic funnel, and I think we all know that things go into the top and they come out at the bottom, right? So if that's the case, step one of the of your most upper funnel ultimately feeds step two in your funnel process. So if your second step in your process, what will receive the outcome from the first step, isn't tuned to receive that, you're really missing an amazing opportunity here to make your advertising work as a machine. So I think the first and foremost thing is to really align all of your campaign strategies, independent of where they're executing, against common goals, right? You're ultimately going to have an outcome goal that you want. There are harvesters. They're basically, you know, demand generation and demand capture sides of the equation. And we want to make sure that what we generate, we have the capture on the other side to close that down. That's both your paid search generally and your website, obviously. Those are really obvious things that are in the demand capture funnel. So making sure that those things are aligned are super important. I think when you have set up good, clean data and consistency in goals, that data can become this hub that the spokes all come off of independent of where you're executing. So you will have different strategies in your upper funnel channels versus your lower funnel channels. They will be different, but they should be all reinforcing that same goal. Love that. And then the second half of it goes back to another thing Karen was talking about, was you need something that stitches that data back together. They're going to all report independently. They're going to measure independently. I don't know how many times I've seen a client get one conversion and show five different conversions along that journey. Display getting a view through conversion, and social getting a view through conversion, and paid search getting a conversion, and et cetera, right? They all get, it's all one conversion, and the attribution modeling is missing in that case, because you need to unify that multi-channel approach back together. So obviously there are tools out there. Google Analytics is a great way to do it, to put commonality into it, to see the same user and track them through the buying cycle. And then platforms that are out there that will help you pull that all back together to make sense of it. When Darren said that he was in multiple tabs trying to figure out where his money goes, it's a problem that I'm going to work with him and solve. Like, I'm sure we're going to figure this out together. I look forward to that challenge and that opportunity. But I think it you know, right from the upfront side, standardize, put your hub together of your data and your goals, execution spokes that come out of it across different channels, and then ultimately something that brings that data back together is the key for us.
For my next question, I'd like to get into emerging technologies, CTV or audio as an example, or any one of what I'm sure are many technologies that are out there that I'm not thinking of at the moment, or things that all of us on this call have not even heard of yet. How do you use those technologies to activate data at scale? Eric, let's start with you on this one.
This ties in really well with the previous question. I think it's a logical continuation of that concept. That core goal is still got to be your North Star. You've got to understand what you want for outcomes. These new emerging channels are somewhere in the consumer funnel. Like, we don't have to call it a funnel. It can go all over the place, but the consumer journey to actually convert, that these channels will play a part in that journey. So understanding what role this new medium, this new channel will actually play in that journey is super important. Think about what the consumer is doing at that point in time. So you mentioned audio. If I'm listening to Spotify and I have Spotify ads on, where am I at in my headspace? What makes sense to communicate? How will I know if I'm going to actually want to take action while I'm maybe heads down working on something in my, you know, just trying to listen to some music and get some code written or something like that, right? So understanding where the consumer is and what their next most logical move will be. If my ad resonates with that consumer, what's the next thing that they'll do? Is it a research type thing? Are they going to go and start to do some searches? Are they going to start to go look for reviews? What is that next most logical thing? So plugging that in the place that it goes in the consumer journey, and then the upstream and downstream, you know, the generator and the receiver functions, as dorky as that might sound, making sure that they're tuned to receive that consumer from that consumer, that part of the journey, is super important. So we come back to anchoring on that same data set. You know, make sure that data set's there to build your strategies and your integrations into your emerging channels. If this is a feeder into another channel, ensure that next channel is ready to receive those users. And if this is the ultimate final point and that drives your conversion, tune your conversion funnel, your conversion capture, to be ready for those users as well.
Taryn, what about you?
Once upon a time, I had a role that was called Emerging Media you know, one of those startup roles that you like name yourself. But my job was to basically say no to people unless they had all these things in place. And one of the big ones was ingesting data. And this was several years ago, so like 100 years in ad tech. But at the time, there were some of the biggest audio providers in the space that were trying to do business with the company I worked at. And at the time, they didn't have a lot of these minimum requirements that the organization that I was at had. And this organization was one of the biggest players in the automotive space. And one of those things, when I think about emerging, first we'll talk about emerging like channels, but then I know the question is related to tech. And there is one emerging tech that is very top of mind for me that I'll talk about in a second. But around channels, you know, we're a media network that does not have owned and operated inventory. And so it's very unique from that standpoint versus folks like Walmart and Target and things like that, where they started with owned and operated inventory and then looked externally for channels. So for us, when we look at a channel, it has to still check all these boxes for Intuit. Like, are we going to be able to push via an audience activation tool? Are we going to have those mechanisms to ingest the data? What are we going to learn? What is the attribution of these channels? There is this shiny object syndrome that a lot of marketers get, where they say, "Oh my gosh, this looks too good to be true. I want to go on it before somebody else eats that lunch there." But at the end of the day, if you spend your money in a channel that is so new that you can't really get the takeaways and the learnings that you need, it's almost not even worth it. Because if you're running multi-channel and you can't tell whether channel A, B, and C actually drove the biggest impact for you, then it's kind of a waste of money. At least that's how I see it. Because then you go into the next quarter and you say, "Hey, how am I going to plan my next budgets?" And if you don't have all of those items that you need, then all of a sudden you're kind of in the dark and you're just throwing your money wherever and just having your own personal bias on what you think is driving the impact for you. So that is how we think about emerging ad channels from this media network initiative that Intuit has done. When I look at emerging tech now, I constantly think about clean rooms. They haunt my nightmares right now. It's a topic where I was asked to really look hard at clean rooms in terms of a value perspective, a pricing perspective. And so for those who don't know, a clean room is a way for two entities to get learnings from data sets by using a third-party service to protect PII or personal identifying information from both sides. And it is something that is very relevant for media networks because oftentimes the client base wants to understand if there's like an overlap from data, you know, what kinds of things can you learn? But from a marketer's perspective in general, it's super helpful for some of these partners, right? If you think about these emerging channels, if you have a relationship with that channel, you can actually come to a conclusion that maybe collaborating on the data can be helpful to have that full attribution on a desktop side and mobile specifically, which is usually a black box for people. But the challenge with clean rooms is that the industry itself doesn't even really understand how to price it or structure their contracts. For example, I've been quoted by certain clean room providers where every clean room is $200,000 plus. And I've also spoke to folks that say that clean rooms are $10,000 or a flat fee and you get infinite clean rooms. And so nobody knows. And I think pricing is just coming out of nowhere. There's no baseline, like a difference of $100,000 just because they're not talking to each other. I think the industry itself will normalize, give or take a month or two, in my opinion. But I don't think folks should hold off if they see use cases for clean rooms. And if you don't know if you have a use case for a clean room, I encourage you to learn more, because clean rooms themselves have a huge variety of use cases for marketers, for MarTech and AdTech use cases. And it is something that is just going to continue to come up, especially in enterprise organizations. If you're not thinking about what is your organization's point of view on clean rooms, then you're already behind the curve, in my opinion. You should really start to think critically on it. A lot of vendors like Adobe, Snowflake, things like that, they offer clean room solutions. And a lot of the folks listening, I'm sure, have relationships with these vendors. I would really recommend you reach out to them to learn more, figure out what those offerings are, you know, look at maybe having a proof of concept to get your feet wet with it. But without it, especially in this world where privacy is key, of course, at Intuit, privacy is paramount to everything we do. We would never, ever look at data without using a clean room with any of our vendors on the ad server side, like Meta, you know, Snap, things like that. They're all really huge, especially for tax season around the Super Bowl. And so these conversations are really important, especially when we look at next year. It's going to become really essential to our data strategy overall.
For my last question, I'd love to wrap up on a takeaway for our listeners. If I'm a marketer, and I'm not, but let's pretend I am, and I'm building an action plan to be more data-driven, where should I start? It feels like the possibilities are nearly endless, but so are the opportunities. Where would you direct me to kick things off? Taryn, let's start with you. You're on a roll here.
Thank you. So we talked a little bit earlier about specifically, you know, looking at data itself in the beginning in terms of this action plan, but in terms of the total playbook itself, it goes beyond that. So let's not reiterate all of that analysis on the data side. So let's assume that is something that you are planning to do. I would make sure that is absolutely in your plan. And as I mentioned before, something that is always on within your organization, meaning always look at the data that comes in. It should not be a focus that's like, oh, we did it last month and we're done with it. Have that continue to be a piece of your architecture as an organization. Then start to look at first versus second versus third party, even zero party data that you have. Completion of data. Do you have any fields, right, that are optional versus mandatory? Do you need to make those mandatory fields in the future? Like if you're a SaaS provider and you have sign up pages and get to know me flows, that can be something to examine. Then now that you have this data-driven aspect of it, if you're streamlining that data, now you move into the idea of your process itself. What is the time that you spend doing things that this evaluation of your data and streamlining it can help with? Is it a matter of building it into like a CDP type platform where you can start to build audiences on the fly once you have your data figured out? That can actually lead you into not having to do custom queries and things like that are a huge time suck for analytics resources. All of a sudden, your marketers can now make really complex audiences. So that's a really strong enablement where I'm sure people are listening are like, oh my God, I spend hours a day working with engineers to pull data sets. If you don't have to do that anymore and you can make it a streamlined approach and an actual UI where someone who doesn't have to code every day for a living can build these audiences, that's a really quick way to streamline things. Then figure out, okay, I have time saved. Where can that time go? Right? You look at platforms that automate things in terms of advertising. On the data side, we talked about CDP. On the advertising side, Fluency is a great platform for that as well. So you have more time for that side of things. When you analyze your process, things trickle down. So if you get data in a better spot, you have more time for other things that can streamline your operation and then fill those gaps. I'm sure a lot of managers are out there are saying, man, I wish I had more time for this, or I wish I didn't spend all my time doing this. When you have your data in a good spot, you can start to focus on more of those aspects of the day-to-day. You think about staffing, right? You can start to understand, do I need to staff a ton of data scientists to make these custom queries, or now can I focus elsewhere with how I resource my organizations? Then, as you have all of this at play, figure out what are the implications for your revenue? Because at the end of the day, we're here to generate revenue for the organizations we work for. And so you're starting on these building blocks, if you will, on the data side, and it should end to end with a growth in revenue, whether on like resources save or prioritization of those resources at the end of the day, and then improve performance in your campaigns, right? So all of these things should lift the boat, lift the ocean or whatever that term is. And this should be the end goal for it.
And Eric, where would you start?
I don't know if you should ever have me try to answer this after you ask Taryn a question like that again, Richard. That was excellent. And Taryn, there's so many points in there that I would echo back. It's always interesting for me when we talk data, it sometimes is a synonym for audiences and sometimes it is a synonym for business intel and business data. It's definitely the umbrella of both. So I think data activation is extremely important because that's, like Taryn said, we're trying to make some margin and improve processes. So I think that there's always one of two different ways that I would start with my very first data activation strategy, being data powered somewhere. And that would be, I would either look at a very painful process in my organization, something that takes a lot of time today, that if I could just, that phrase is super important. Why can't we just, or why can't it just, that phrase comes up a lot. why can't we just take advantage of this data to make this pain go away? There's a lot of times there where your strategist is clicking buttons all day long or into the weekends, late nights. And those are the things that we think we can, you can make go away for. So that's definitely one way. Look for your large time consumers, because that will unlock your resources for your human resources for other things and other creativity. No different than like almost everything else we're doing in the space right now. AI is meant to do that, has that same promise, right? Same promise, different tactic. The alternative is, and this could sound backwards to go here, is to think about your killer feature first. There's something that you have, if you're a brand advertiser or an agency, that you think is very unique to you. I do something different than anybody else. There's a reason you would choose me over somebody else. And a lot of times those things are very difficult to do. They're long tail, complex tasks that it's just hard to get to them because there's a lot of block and tackle work in your way. So I would recommend look for those things, because they can be that sales differentiator for you to have someone come to you to work with you as their advertising partner rather than someone else, or enhance your brand based on what you do there. So when I've thought about this a lot, Taryn and I know a company that we have worked with together in the past, and they happen to be in the automotive space. And one of the things that we look to empower are whether or not your service bay can actually accept any reservations the next 3 or 4 weeks, right? So if you called to get service done in your car and the bays were full, that's wasted advertising. It's a cool killer feature to say, I know about this, and I'm going to make sure my advertising doesn't waste your dollars during that time. So having those concepts where you can get out there and put your killer features out first can be another really great spot you can activate your data. You can't do that just with intuition. It takes data to go do those types of things and to be a true differentiator, because a lot of people don't have that information. So lean into your differentiators or lean into your extreme time sinks. One of those two things is where I would get started with when it comes to your data activation strategy.
One more thing here. That was great, Eric. I completely agree with, especially with the perspective around getting all of your ducks in a row with your data and your activation side of things. If I had like one thing that I'd recommend to a team who is saying like, I'm not data driven yet, right? I don't know what the next step is. One thing we do at Intuit is we have these periodic workshops where we bring together folks that normally don't communicate and say like, man, I don't see why I would ever talk to this team. Get them in a room and say, hey, we're all a cohesive unit driving towards an objective. Are there any things that we wish we could do? And Eric had mentioned like, I wish we could do this. I wish this was a possibility. And get that perspective from the marketers who are running the campaigns, the analytics team who is analyzing the data. And you can identify gaps that when you are an executive or an overseer or a manager or whatever of an org, you don't see these things. You're not in the day-to-day, nor do you have the time to do all of these things. But collaborative as a group, there are probably 10 things that you are not even aware of that are maybe a focus that you don't know that the team is just really wishing you could execute. And oftentimes, data can be a solve for those in ways that you don't even anticipate. And having pens on paper as a group, having those brainstorm sessions are really key, right? And if it is a gap on the data side and you get that data figured out, all of a sudden you have new improvements that you did not think possible. So I would just encourage folks to do that. Even if you think you have collaboration with these folks, I bet we're not having these huge collaborative like offsites. Some people think that they're like a revenue kind of suck, right? It pulls in the resources to do that. But oftentimes the outcomes can really, really be impactful for an organization.
That wraps up episode 4 of our podcast mini-series in partnership with Fluency. We hope you've enjoyed this series so far. We'll be bringing you an additional episode recorded live from Advertising Week New York in the coming weeks, so stay tuned for that. To learn more about Fluency, you can check them out at fluency.inc, where you can schedule a consultation, view case studies in automation, or use their free tool to help you calculate the time and cost savings you can experience with automation.